Hello. It looks like my fan club here. My very tiny fan club. You totally can have your video on unless you don't want to be seen in case anybody watches the recording, but we are recording already. I think now is a good time to get started, and if anybody else joins us, then awesome. If you at any point have difficulty hearing me, just let me know, or if you have any questions or you want to stop me or you have comments or critiques or anything like that, feel free to just unmute yourselves and jump right on in. Okay, I'm going to start sharing my screen because the first thing that I'd like to do is show you a source sheet that I have for today's class. Okay, so I'm just gonna increase the size of this on the screen so we can see it more clearly. And here we go. All right, so last time we met, which was 2 weeks ago, we were introducing ourselves to the idea of Vayikra and kind of being frank about the fact that Vayikra often does not make it into even the most rigorous day school curriculum. And I think the reason for that, unfortunately, is that we're kind of scared of Vayikra. All that talk of Karbanos, which seemed very foreign and unfamiliar to us today, can be off-putting. And, you know, we tend to have this sense that Vayikra is a book that deals with laws that are maybe not really relevant to us anymore. But as we pointed out last week, that's actually very far from the truth. And aside from the fact that, yes, you know, there definitely are a lot of mitzvos that directly pertain to Korbanos, there are also a ton of laws about Bein Adam L'Chaveiro and other sort of mitzvos that are Bein Adam L'Makom, between us and Hashem, that we very much are involved in this day and age. And we took a look at the Ramban's introduction to Sefer Vayikra, where he talked about the idea that as we kind of translated his words, yes, there are a lot of korbanos in Sefer Vayikra, but the real overarching theme of the book is Kedusha, which for now we'll just define as sanctity, but that's a word that we'll have to spend a lot more time on. And that everything in the Sefer does seem to either pertain directly to Korbanos, or it is, as we said, Korban adjacent, like it's somehow either connected in a way through the laws of the Korbanos, or learned in relation to the Korbanos, something along those lines. So that's just like a really short recap of the big things that we talked about last week. Last idea that we had spoken about was from Rabbi Sachs's Covenant and Conversation on Vayikra, where he points out that if we are going to look at the Torah as a chiasm with a mirrored structure, like an ABCBA kind of pattern, where that C, the one that's unlike the other bookended similarities, is the high point in the center rather than a climax at the end. If that's the case, then out of the Chamisha Chamshei Torah, Sefer Vayikra is really the high point of the whole Torah. So it really means that we need to pay attention to it closely, and we need to find ways to mine Vayikra for contemporary relevance, even if at the moment we are not able to actually, perform the avoda of the Beis HaMikdash and to actually offer physical korbanos. Okay. Any questions or ideas before we launch into something new? Or are we good right now? Okay. Then here we go. All right. So I toyed around with the idea of maybe not starting Vayikra from the beginning and kind of diving right into the middle and picking something that maybe we already have some ideas about. And in the end, I decided, let's begin at the beginning. Let's not avoid the subject of Carbano. So to start with, what I have for you here on this source sheet for our class number two is the first nine psukim of the first chapter in Sefer Vayikra, in Parshas Vayikra. Now, we're not going to really stress all of these psukim today. We're really only going to be looking a little bit at the first pasuk, mainly at the second pasuk. But I wanted to at least have kind of the whole first topic, even if we're not going to really delve into all of it. So the Sefer begins with Hashem calling out to Moshe, Vayikra el Moshe. And I want you to notice that the letter Aleph in the first word, Vayikra, is small. And I actually changed the font size on purpose because that's the way that it would be written in a Sefer Torah, with a small Aleph. And there's a ton of commentary and tons of Midrashim about why is that Aleph small. And there's a lot that can be learned out from it. We are going to see a couple of ideas, but, you know, like a small fraction of all the different things that we could take away from that little Aleph, but that's there on purpose. So the Sefer begins with Hashem calling out to Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem Elav Me'ohel Moed Lemor, and Hashem speaks to him from within the Ohel Moed, from the spot in the Mishkan, precisely, in fact, the spot in the Mishkan between the two Kruvim, those two angelic figures of gold that were molded onto the top of the cover that rested upon the Aron inside the Kodesh Kadashim. So we learn that in fact is like the spot from where the voice of Hashem would emanate, from where it would be heard by Moshe. So, like, you know, you could picture almost like that's where the loudspeaker is. That's the place from where Moshe is always going to hear Hashem's voice emanating. And that speaks to the idea that what is it, like, why is it that spot in particular? Yes, it's the Kodesh HaKadashim, right? Yes, it's the spot between the two Kruvim. What do the Kruvim represent? They can be said to represent Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. Okay, so it's that point of connection between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. That's what prophecy is. That's what it means to hear the voice of Hashem. And what's inside of the Aron, directly under that place where the voice of Hashem is heard from, it's the Luchos. Okay, so the Torah, which represents the voice of Hashem, the way that Hashem communicates with Bnei Yisrael. So so Hashem communicates with Moshe and says the following, Daber el Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, v'yamarta alehem, and say to them the following new law. Adam ki yakriv mikem korban lahashem. Any Adam, which is a word that refers generally to humanity, to any human being. And it's significant that that word is used rather than ish, right? Like a man or ish o isha, as we sometimes see in Psukim, a man or a woman. We'll see a little further ahead with certain korbanos, it says ish, but here it's just Adam. Any person with certain restrictions, but any person who wants to bring a korban, in theory, has the option of doing so. Okay, again, with a few restrictions, but a person does not necessarily have to be a Jew to bring a korban. And we'll talk a little bit soon about why that is. So Adam ki yakriv mikhem korban Hashem, who wants to bring from your midst a korban, I'm not going to translate that yet, to Hashem, min habehema, min habakar, min hatzon takrivu es korbanchem. They should bring that korban from the following, either of some sort of livestock, either cattle or from sheep, which here is inclusive of goats. Okay, so cattle, sheep, goats, like that's it. There are other kosher animals, but to start with, the first type of korban that we're referring to here is going to consist of just these limited animals. And then the next pasuk, Gimel, which is not highlighted, specifies for us that the first type of korban that we are learning about here is in olah. So im olah korbano, if you're giving a korban olah specifically, then min habakar, it should be cattle. Zachar tamim yakrivenu, it should be male and it should be unblemished. And that's the pool that you should bring your korban from. And I'll just finish that pasuk. El pesach o el moed yakrivoso liratzono lifnei Hashem. You should bring it to the entrance of the Ohel Moed. The word lirtzono is interesting because it could be referring to Hashem. It could mean that for Hashem's ratzon, like for Hashem's will, you should bring this before Hashem, meaning like this, it's Hashem's will that you bring the korban in this way. But it could also, different commentators will say that this actually refers to the person who's bringing it, that it should be out of their own ratzon, out of their own desire to bring a korban to Hashem. Okay, so let's pause for a second here and let's try to come up with like a working definition of the word korban. Whenever we're trying to understand a term in Lashon HaKodesh, we're always going to want to look at the Shoresh. Who here is awake enough and brave enough without even using video to just try to let the rest of us know what are the three letters of the Shoresh that make up, the root of the word korban? What does it come from? Just remember to unmute yourself if you want to say it. Here, let's highlight that word, korban. No, I guess everybody has laryngitis tonight. Okay, so a korban.
It's okay, Karov.
I knew that was going to get you going, Yona. Okay, so lekarev, kuf, resh, beis.
I don't want anyone to hear that my two-year-old's still awake, so I have to stay on mute.
No judging here. All right. Yes, so to lekarev means to come close, right? Karov is close. In Hebrew. So, Yona, what's the connotation there? And we do not mind two-year-olds at all. What's the connotation that korban is from the root word close?
The implication would be that that is the main vehicle that we can use to get close to Hashem.
Precisely. Awesome. Okay. How do people typically translate the word korban?
Sacrifice.
Sometimes you'll also hear the word.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Sometimes you'll also, thank you, Mom. Sometimes you'll also hear the word offering, okay? I think that of those two, if we had to choose one of them, I'd prefer to go with the word offering. Because sacrifice is a word that could potentially kind of give us all the wrong idea about what exactly a korban can accomplish. So let's just stay focused for the moment on the definition that Yona is giving us, which is something that is primarily supposed to help us achieve closeness with Hashem. Okay, now I want to show you, and some of you are going to get a great big kick out of this, I want to show you some pages here from Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch's commentary on the Chumash, okay, on Vayikra in particular. So I just want to make sure my screen sharing is still going well. Can everybody see this in front of them? Okay, so I actually have three pages to this. Yeah, I just want to make sure they're all still here, but yeah, perfect. Okay, now I just, I put this little box here because we're not looking at the top part of this particular page, and I just want to give credit to Feldheim for years ago having given me permission to, to print up copies of this to share with my students. So let's take a look at what Rav Hirsch has to say about the word korban. So he reads like this: we have no word in Western languages that adequately conveys the concept inherent in the Hebrew term korban. So in other words, like, don't even try translating it because it's not really going to get you where you want to be. And he tells us that this idea, you know, this word offering is something that is not native to English. You know, in German, people were using this as a translation, apparently in Latin. But unfortunately, in the sense of sacrifice, it has taken on the connotation of destruction, annihilation, and loss. A connotation that is foreign and antithetical to the Hebrew concept of karban, meaning the reason that sacrifice is not such a great English word to use for karban is because when you talk about sacrificing something in any other context, it usually means something you're not really happy to be doing, right? It's like, oh, you know, a person had to, you know, sacrifice their happiness for somebody else's happiness, right? So where does that leave the person who sacrificed? Unhappy. You know, a person had to sacrifice their free time for the sake of some other cause. Well, that leaves me without any free time, right? So it's not a good feeling that comes along with this idea of sacrifice. And what Rav Hirsch is warning us is, like, we don't want to come away from learning about Karbanos thinking, oh, well, this is me taking, you know, my animal, you know, which is a really costly piece of property, and sacrificing that for Hashem. So, like, it makes Hashem happy, but it makes me really unhappy, right? It leaves me with less than what I had before. And we don't want to have that that understanding, because that's not authentic. That's not really what a korban is. A korban does not leave me with less than what I had before. A korban is supposed to, if anything, bring me to something greater and leave me with more in some way than what I had before. Even the, he says, and even in the original meaning of the term offero in Latin, in the sense of offering, like, I'm offering this to you because I think that it might be something you'd want from me, does not correspond to korban in its full sense. For the idea of an offering implies a prior request or, and I would underline this word, need on the part of the one to whom the object is offered. So that's the reason why the word offering is not great, because it implies that I'm taking this animal and I'm saying, here, Hashem, you can use this more than I can, right? Or, Hashem, I thought you might be really happy to have my sheep. So, again, that's problematic, because what it's saying is Hashem is lacking something, right? Or Hashem has a need that I have to fulfill. And theologically, that's really troubling. There is no distinction between an offering and a gift or a present, right? I mean, a good gift is going to be something that the giver knows the receiver really wants or needs. But Hashem has no wants or needs. So then how does that make a korban a good offering or a good gift? It can't be that that's what it is. The concept of korban is far removed from all of these. It is never to be understood as a gift or a present. It is found solely in the context of man's relationship to God. So now let's skip to the next page of his commentary, and can only be understood on the basis of the meaning of the root kuf resh beis. All right, so now we need a new definition. So like Yonah said, the meaning of l'kariv is in accord with its plain sense, to draw closer, to arrive at a close relationship with someone. So then it follows that the purpose and the result of hakrava, which is coming close, is a positive attainment, the realization of a more noble existence. And that the opposite, destruction, annihilation, and loss, in this case, you know, the destruction or the annihilation of, let's say, the animal life that was, you know, that was given for the sake of this korban, or loss, like the financial loss that the giver of the korban incurs, that should not be ascribed to it. Okay, so we don't want to define korban as anything that's going to mean something that results in destruction or loss or less than what was previously in existence. It should always be a definition that talks about attainment of something greater. It also follows that a korban serves to meet the needs of the makriv, meaning the giver, and not the needs of the one, meaning Hashem, to whom the korban is brought near. Because as we established already, Hashem has no needs and has no desires That's us. Okay. So we shouldn't project the fact that we have needs and desires onto Hashem and say, well, I'd really like to get a new goat as a present. I guess Hashem would like that too, because that is a fallacy. The will of the makriv, the giver, is that something of his own, and I will just even modify that slightly and say his or her own, because a korban could just as easily, come from a woman, but something of the makriv should come into closer relationship with God. This is the very essence of a korban, and the act that is designed to bring this about is called hakrava. Okay, so again, kind of defies a direct translation in English, but this coming close, the act of bringing a korban. The purpose of a korban is to seek Hashem's nearness. Kirvas Elokim Yechpatzun. This is a quote from Yeshayahu, basically just saying that closeness with God is what we are seeking. And for a Jew, that is the sole good without which he feels behemos, beast-like, okay, and I'm taking that from Sefer Tehillim, stripped of the true calling of a human being. So there is something transformative about bringing a korban, particularly one that consists of an animal, where there's like this transfer that's taking place, where we take some part of us that is beast-like, that is behema-like, and we're kind of processing that through this actual animal in order to, I used the word the other day, sublimate ourselves. Avi didn't like that for some reason. He felt like that was a little too, psychobabble-ish to be able to apply it here, but it's the best word that I can think of. And I think I want to stop here at this moment with Rev Hirsch. Perhaps we'll come back to him a little bit later. Okay, so now, let's come back to the original source sheet that we were working with. And again, any questions or comments, go ahead and interrupt me. Okay, so some of you know that I'm a huge, huge fan of the commentary of the Kli Yakar, which was a Peirush written by Rav Shlomo Ephraim Lunshitz, who was a Rav in Poland in the late 1500s and early 1600s. And he wrote this really beautiful commentary on the Torah, which is really just like my all-time favorite, if I had to pick a favorite, which is hard to do. And he says some really interesting things to perform, like an an interesting type of what we might call exegesis on Pasuk Bet here in particular. And also to give us some of the bigger ideas going on behind what is a korban and what is it meant to accomplish. Now, before he does that, I just want to show you a couple of different ideas that he quotes out of, as I said before, many, many different ideas as to why the word Vayikra has this little aleph written in the Sefer Torah. So to begin with, he quotes from the Medrash, from Yalkut Shimoni, and he says as follows. So I'm going to read along in Hebrew, but I'll translate as well. And catch me if I didn't translate something clearly enough or I didn't explain it well enough. B'yalkut masik lama maschilin hatinokos lilmod min parshas karbanos. So the question that he's asking here comes with an underlying bit of information, which I don't think we've discussed yet. And that is that, believe it or not, even though a few minutes ago we just started off our conversation by saying, most people these days go through, or many people these days go through a full day school education without ever learning Vayikra, that was not always the case. And even still in some school systems today is not the case. Traditionally, small children, when they began learning Chumash, would learn Vayikra. And there are a lot of sources that talk about this and that talk about why it is. So the question that the Kli Yakar is bringing in from the Medrash is, what's the deal with that? Why is it that small children would begin learning Chumash by learning about the Karbanos? again, that's certainly not what a lot of schools do nowadays, and for pretty obvious reasons. So if we have all these obvious reasons why it makes more sense to have children start learning Chumash from like virtually anywhere else in the Torah, then why was it the tradition in Jewish communities for a really, really, really long time, like even going back to the times of the Gemara, to have them start with Vayikra and learning about Korbanos? So I've highlighted key ideas in this green font here. So the first answer that Kliaka brings in from the Medrash is, Maha Korbanos Tehorim Af Hatinokos Kain. We want to draw a parallel between the fact that just as the korbanos are tahorim, which we've defined for now as in our last year as being, you know, ritually pure, which is a prerequisite for kedusha, so too are young children. So they have this purity to them. They're like unspoiled in a way that, you know, once people have gotten older and experienced more of the world, it's harder to be. And we want to keep them in this state of tahara and expose them to the ultimate tahara and kedusha, which is the korbanos. So that's one idea. Another idea that he brings in is kvasim b'nei shana. So he points out that that when we look to see what the korbanos consist of, in a number of cases, a person would bring a sheep that is 1 year old. So what is the deal with like this 1 year old sheep being suitable to be brought as a korban? Shemechabsim avonos ha'adam. Just as much as a 1 year old sheep, right, this young little sheep can cleanse away the sins of a person, the osin oso ketinok ben shana, and turn them into somebody who's like the spiritual equivalent of just a one-year-old child. So that's another reason that we want to start off with these young, spiritually clean and pure children and have them learning about korbanos, right? So there's this kind of back and forth idea that we have, just as much as a korban can restore somebody to this state of spiritual purity, a child is already in that state, so let's have them learning about korbanos. He adds also, ha'alif kitana, so now, what is the deal? This was the question we said we were going to be answering. What's the deal with this little aleph? So it all ties together. That small aleph is meant to be remez, a little hint, shakitanim yeschilukan, that this is where the little ones, meaning little children, should start their learning. That little aleph, you know, stands for or represents little children should begin their learning here. Velimudzehu birosh, this should be the beginning of their learning. Ka'alef rosh laosios, just like the letter aleph is at the beginning of the aleph bays. So like it all kind of ties together really nicely, right? So small children should begin learning from Vayikra because they are tahorim, they are already in, and still in this state of spiritual purity. That's what korbanos are about. That's what korbanos can bring a person back to later on in life if they need to be restored to that state. And we have this little aleph, which is meant to remind us of this idea that that's where they should begin their learning, right? You know, when they're small and when they're at that aleph stage, the beginning of learning. Davar acher, here's another idea. Aleph lashon limud, that the word aleph is always has a connotation of learning. And he quotes a pasuk via Afecha Chachma from Sefer Iov, where the word aleph is actually used as a verb, meaning like to teach somebody from the start. So there's no equivalent for that in English, like I'll aleph you, meaning teach you from the beginning. And this is a remez or hint, she'ein halimud miskayim ki'im b'misha maktin es atzmo, that a person's learning will only be like truly long lasting and really stay with them if they first minimize themselves. Okay, and I think this is a reference to just ego and humility. If a person can humble themselves, you know, diminish their own sense of importance and be willing to learn, like truly willing to learn and to take ideas from whoever is going to be able to teach them, then their learning is going to be something that will really and truly endure, will really become part of them, as opposed to just like a passing experience that they think, okay, well, I don't need to remember that, you know, I'm too smart for that, or, you know, that person, you know, who do they think they are? You know, I don't have anything to learn from that person. But if we can humble ourselves and diminish our own egos, then our learning really stands a chance to endure. V'chein, remez shemoshe zacha l'kriya zu. And this idea that Moshe is the one who's on the receiving end of this vayikra at the beginning, the one that comes with the small aleph, is based on the idea that l'fi shehikti nesatzmo, Moshe himself was someone who really did this. Moshe diminished his own ego and was humble. And where do we see an example of that? Right at the beginning of Moshe's career, ubarach min hasrara, that he ran from any kind of officialdom or importance. Ve'amar lo ish dvarim anochi, when he said to Hashem, you know, in Shmos, I'm not a man of words, right? When he was at the burning bush and he was trying to convince Hashem, no, this is, you know, I'm not the right guy for the job. You should choose somebody else who's on a higher level, or somebody who's already got the credentials that I don't have. So Moshe is the prime example of diminishing himself and his own importance and humbling himself before Hashem. And that's dafka why he was chosen for the role of the one who transmitted Torah from Hashem to the rest of the Jewish people. And this little aleph here in the word vayikra, which is Hashem speaking to Moshe, shows us, again, with like a visual, that Moshe diminished himself right at the beginning. And that's why he was zocha to have his Torah learning, you know, his Torah learning from Hashem directly, be the Torah that truly endures. Okay, so that's the first piece of the Kliyakar that I wanted to share. And again, there are a lot of other ideas that can be taken from this little aleph, but I thought these two were really beautiful. Okay. I'm going to take a sip of water and just check to see if anybody has anything they want to add or ask here. You can always put up like your little blue hand, or you can just unmute yourself. Okay. Next. The Kliyakar goes on, and he is now going to interpret the words on Pasuk Beis that I had highlighted up here at the top of the source sheet, which include Hashem's actual instructions, right? He tells Moshe, speak to B'nai Israel and say to them, again, Adam, any person who wants to bring a korban to Hashem, they should bring it from these types of animals. So what he's going to do now is a really cool bit of picking up on the specific meaning of each one of the words in this pasuk and how every word is actually very deeply significant. Okay, so here he goes. Hischil b'lashon yachid v'sayein b'lashon rabin takrivu korbanchem. So the first thing he notices, which many other commentators notice as well, is that it starts off talking in the singular. Okay, tell B'nai Yisrael, Adam, a person, ki yakriv, who wants to bring, all of that is singular. And then we end up in the pasuk saying, it should be from these and these animals that takrivu es korbanchem. You plural, bring your plural korbanos. So what's going on there with that shift in pronouns and verbs, where we start off in the singular and then in the same sentence switch over to plural? So anytime that happens in the Torah, somebody's going to notice it, everybody's going to notice it, and they're going to have something to say about it. So the Kliyakar is going to take it in a really interesting direction. So he says like this, Vinir Lamar, it would seem to be, Sharatzah, that the reason Hashem switched the pronouns in this pasuk here is, Lahaz here, to warn Kol Makrive Korban LaHashem, anyone who wants to bring a Korban to Hashem, Shelo Yikashlu, that they shouldn't make the same mistakes, Bebez Dvarim, in the two things, Asher Bahem, Yikashlu, Kain Vehevel, that Kain and Hevel made mistakes in. So, what are the two things that Kain and Hevel, back in their day, going all the way back to Parshas Bereishis, when Kain and Hevel brought Korbanos, what are the two things that went wrong with them? Now, I would say that at first thought, like if we're kind of going back into our memories here and thinking, okay, what do I know about Kain and Hevel? What was it that happened with them? We would probably more easily come up with one thing that went wrong than with two things that went wrong. Does anybody want to take a stab at what was a problem? And perhaps you'll think about this with more clarity than I would have, and you'll immediately be able to say, no, of course there's two things that went wrong. So the first thing that came to my mind when thinking about this is one of the things that is mentioned here by the Kli Yakar. Shayu Rishonim Behakravas Korban. So Kain and Hevel, of course, being the first people who are mentioned explicitly in the Torah as having brought Korbanos. What was the first problem? Ki Kain Nichshal Bema Shehevim in HaPachos V'HaGarua. So Kain made the first mistake, and that was bringing from that which was like the lowliest and the least appealing, and that was flaxseed. So we're told that, you know, that he brings from his own, but it's not the best that there was. And the Medrash talks about this at length, that he didn't offer to Hashem the best of what he had. It was like, you know, maybe the leftovers, like the ones that weren't such great quality that he didn't really want to use anyway. That's what he offers as his carbon. Clearly, that's not good. And he says, what's wrong with that when we're talking about carbonos in general, following Kayan's footsteps here? He says, somebody who has done a chait, somebody who has sinned with their soul, needs to bring the soul or the life force, let's say here, of an animal in place of their own life force, which is an idea that other mefarshim talk about too, that a korban that consists of an animal especially is meant to kind of be like a life in place of a life. Like really, it should be my life that I'm offering up to Hashem. Okay, certainly when we're talking about like a korban chatas or any type of korban that's given because of someone who did something wrong, someone who violated Torah law, really it should be my nefesh that's going up there on the mizbeach. But instead of that, because that's kind of self, you know, that sort of defeats the purpose of like what Hashem wants from us in many ways, better I should place symbolically, instead of me on the Mizbeach, the life force of another creature, of another being. But I should look at it as though, like, that's really meant to be me up there. Ubedzochak hitir HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'ani lahavi mincha. And yes, not everybody, even in the times when there was a Beis HaMikdash or a Mishkan and we could bring korbanos, not everybody was able to afford a whole animal to be able to give as a korban. And therefore, yes, it's like, but b'di'evet, there is an option for one who just cannot afford an animal to give a korban mincha, which is a flour korban instead. Flour as in, like, you know, made from wheat as opposed to like pretty flowers, because that's obviously a great deal cheaper than offering up a whole animal. She'ein ba nefesh, right? You know, it doesn't have its own life force, so it's not really, it's not really as good of a parallel, right, between this idea that, like, I used my own life force, my own energy to do something wrong, and therefore now I need to offer up the life force of another creature in place of me. Okay, you know, if I couldn't afford to do that, I could give a korban mincha, a flower korban instead. Ki'ilu hikriv nafsho. And because Hashem is gracious and generous, Hashem is the source of all graciousness and generosity, Hashem will accept that if I can't afford the animal, because Hashem will consider that as if I'm giving the life of an animal in place of my own. All right? So what is it that Cain did wrong when he took, like, the worst of the flax seed that he had to offer? What he was basically demonstrating to Hashem or communicating to Hashem was, I don't care enough to offer you the best that I have. And it's really kind of pointless to begin with, because at its core, a korban is supposed to be offering up the life or life force of one creature in place of my own. Okay, does that make sense so far? So Cain really got it wrong, is what the Kli Yakar is saying here. Now, what about Hevel, though? What did Hevel do that was different from Cain? So Cain gives, you know, this like limp, crummy flax seed from the bottom of the pile. But Hevel goes and he brings, and I didn't have the psukim here in front of you, but Hevel, hevi mi b'choros tsono. Okay, it tells us straight in the psukim, he brought from the firstborn sheep, right? From like the best quality of his flocks. So it would seem then that Hevel has done a perfect job where Cain fell flat, right? And typically, I think when people look at Bereishis and they're studying this episode of what happened with Cain and with Hevel, they say, oh, Cain, oh, he really messed up. And Hevel was the good guy, and Hevel's the one who gave the really nice korban, and Cain should have done that too. And isn't it a tragedy that, you know, Cain then goes and kills Hevel? You know, it seems like Hevel was the one that we really wanted to, like, he's the one we're rooting for, right? He seems like the good guy in the story. However, the Kli Yakar says something really interesting. He says, Afal Pi, even though Hevel brought the best quality sheep, the best of the animals, so it's going right where Cain went wrong, right? It's an actual animal. It's a life in place of a life. It's the best that he has as opposed to like the worst quality of what he has. However, Mikol Makom Lo Tov Asa, the Kli Yakar says, this wasn't really good either what he did. Because Lo Nisorer El HaKorban Me'atzmo, Velonis da reis lemitzvah zo me'atzmo. Yeah, he gave a bunch of like really good, excellent quality sheep. However, in the giving of those sheep to Hashem, he wasn't really feeling it. There wasn't any real personal emotion or connection or desire for connection that was underlying Hevel's decision to offer Hashem these sheep, or to, you know, to be makriv these sheep. And lo nizdareiz lemitzvazo me'atzmo means he wasn't motivated, you know, or excited to do this of his own volition or because of his own personal feelings. Rag achar shera'a sheikriv kayin korban az niskanebo. He saw that Cain gave a korban, and he was like, oh man, I should do that too. And it was just, you know, to do what Cain did, you know, but to do it better than Cain, that he ended up giving these sheep of his as korbanos. So Kli Yakar is saying, that wasn't great. That was really problematic also. V'hevel hevi gamhu l'hashvos atzmo elav. The only reason that Hevel gave this korban was so that he'd kind of, you know, put himself on even footing with Cain. That is clearly not going to be the proper motivation for bringing a korban. So just to go back and recap here now, what we're saying in this particular paragraph here is that the pasuk Adam ki akriv mikam, the pasuk in the, you know, the beginning here that's introducing the idea of korbanos, tells us first using singular language and then telling plural language, don't make the same mistakes that those two, plural, Cain and Hevel, made when they brought their korbanos. So any individual person who comes to bring a korban should not mess up A, like Cain, or B, like Hevel. Okay? So they should not bring a korban that is less or poorer quality than what they really could be giving. And B, they should do it because they're motivated to do so independently and not because they saw, oh, somebody else did it, I guess I should do that too. All right, so those are two mistakes that the pasuk doesn't want us to make when it comes to offering korbanos of our own. So now let's continue. What about these words, Adam ki akriv mikem, okay? Any person from among you who decides to bring a korban. So each of these words now are going to be explained very carefully by the Kli Yakar. Lishon yachid. So again, we start off with this singular here, Adam. And it's Adam, meaning a person or a human being, not ish, not an ish o isha, but Adam. And the Kli Yakar is looking at this and saying that there's no way this is a coincidence, okay? This is not just a plain term for any person, but it is meant to ring a bell in our heads to remind us of the most famous person referred to as Adam, and that would be Adam HaRishon. So the first Adam. So this word here is used, Lomar lecha shehamakriv yihyeh ke'adam harishon bekorbano. That any person who does decide to bring a korban should be like Adam HaRishon, who gave his own korban, or should be like Adam HaRishon in the way that he gave his own korban. Now, we don't have a record of this per se in the beginning of Bereishis, but Chazal talk a lot about Adam HaRishon and the first korban that he brought. I was looking earlier, I don't think I kept this open to show you, but I was looking at some sources that led me to a page in the Gemara. It's Chulin Daf Samach Amud Aleph, so the first side of the 60th Daf of Maseches Chulin, that talks about Adam and the first korban that he brought. And I did not really leave this part in the Kli Yakar's commentary because it's not exactly relevant to the points that I wanted to make today, but you may have heard of this before. It says that Adam brought a korban of a shor, which is an ox that had one single horn coming out of its forehead. So make of that what you will. There are a lot of like Kabbalistic and metaphysical ideas that can be taken from this idea. But certainly there are people who look at that and say, there was a unicorn in Gan Eden. And you know, that's what Adam HaRishon brought as the first korban, and perhaps that's why they don't exist anymore. We'll leave that part aside. But what does it mean when we say that a person should be like Adam HaRishon when they give a korban? Shaya yichidi ba'olam. Okay, so let's think about Adam and what sets him apart from everybody else. He is alone in the world, okay? There's no competition. It's not like what we were just talking about a minute ago with Cain and with Hevel, where like the one does it this way and the other one does it this way because the first one did it that way, and now they're like in competition with each other, and we know how that ends. Adam's alone in the world. There is no competition. There's nobody else to look at. There's nobody else to compare himself to or for him to be compared to. And beyond that, Chazal talk about how just as Rashi quotes this, so it's kind of a well-known idea, just as everything in the world was accessible and available to Adam, like it was all free for his taking because there was nobody else that it could belong to, like any property in the world, so too any korban that that a person wants to bring to the Mishkan, it has to be completely their own property. You can't bring a korban to Hashem from something that you took without permission from another person, or stole, God forbid, without permission, or it was just like given to you and you didn't actually, put in any effort to acquire it for yourself. It's got to be something that really feels like it is a piece of you, right? It's an extension of you. It's an important thing that belongs to you. Or else, when going back to the purpose of a korban, likarev, to bring me close to God, there's not really going to be any feeling behind it if it's not something that I have some true deep ownership of before I decide to bring it as a korban. So a couple of different ways we could understand this, but just as Adam is alone in the world, right? Ukeshem shemizeh hatsad hayanitzol min hagezel. So just as, on the one hand, this prevents him from ever accidentally even taking something that, that was stolen property and giving that as a korban to Hashem, right? Because everything was his, Shaya Yechidi, he's alone in the world, Bayaha Kol Shalo, everything belongs to him anyway. Kach mizeh hatzad hayanitzol min hadavar shenichshal bo hevel. So too, I just highlighted the wrong part there. So too, the fact that he was alone in the world, it also prevented him from ending up like Hevel, right? From stumbling in the same area where Hevel did, which was, as we said a minute ago, in only giving a korban to be like somebody else, right? Or to put himself on even footing with somebody else. If there is nobody else who could potentially offer a korban, when Adam HaRishon gives a korban, right? This Adam ki akriv mikem, the only possible motivation is you're doing this because you want to be doing it and not because you're looking at someone else on the outside. Since he is alone in the world, it's obvious, it's certain, it's a guarantee that he came to the idea to give this korban of his own volition. It totally came from his own mind and wasn't inspired by somebody else or wasn't meant to imitate somebody else, right? He couldn't have seen anybody else do it because there wasn't anybody else to do it. And so that's why in this pasuk we have this specific pronoun, an Adam, who decides to bring a korban. It's used because it's meant to remind us sheyehiyeh ke'adam harishon, that we should be like Adam harishon when yakriv mikem, we decide to give from what is ours. Shetihiyeh, and so now what are those words? Ki yakriv mikem, from what is yours. We absolutely have to bring as a korban, or as the substance of our korban, something that is truly ours and not something that belonged to somebody else or that that we didn't have any genuine claim to or any genuine ownership over. Kimikem ubachem yavo hahis orus el hamakriv. When it does truly come from a person, that which they decide to bring as a korban, so let's say, this is my animal, or this is my, this is my barrel of flour that I'm offering up on the Mizbeach here, if it's really and truly mine, and if the idea, the inspiration to bring it was really and truly mine, then I'm going to have the right motivation. And it's going to bring about the desired effect. Zehu korban laHashem. That's something that's truly going to bring me close to Hashem. Kivadai ein kavanaso ki'im l'shem Hashem. Because then for sure I have the right intentions here, just for the sake of God. This is meant to bring me close to God and nothing else. And this idea here is important because it's meant to exclude somebody who offers a korban for any other ulterior motives whatsoever. Zehu eino mikem ve'eino korban laHashem eino mikem. So it's that, that if it's for any other ulterior motive, it's not really coming from you and it's not really for Hashem. Anything that comes, you know, anything that would be brought as a korban that, that comes as a result of feelings of jealousy. Eino ose ki'im lehis hader atzmo bifnei habrios. The person who brings a korban that was inspired by feelings of jealousy of another person, right? Like the way that Hevel brought his korban, they're not doing that for the sake of Hashem. It's not to bring them closer to Hashem. It's meant to lord themselves over somebody else. So that's not a korban to Hashem. That's like that's a, you know, killing an animal to make me look better than another guy. But that bears no resemblance to what a korban is supposed to be. V'nimtza she'eino korban Hashem, it's for the sake of people, you know, and what other people will think of me and what sort of social stature I might gain because of it when people say, ooh, you know, ooh, she just brought like a whole truckload of sheep. You know, that's really impressive. But if the only reason that I'm doing it is because yesterday my neighbor gave, you know, a barrel of flour as a korban and I'm thinking, I can do better than that. That isn't a korban. Okay, last point here. V'achar kach amar min habehema v'gomer. Okay, so remember going all the way back up to the psukim here, once we've established that a person should make themselves like Adam, and, you know, a korban should be from that which is totally theirs, and they have a sense of ownership over and a sense of you know, this is something that really matters to me, and we should avoid the mistakes of Cain and Hevel of giving something that's poor quality, you know, or something that's not alive, if we can afford to give something that is a life being given over to Hashem in place of ours. And it shouldn't have anything to do with, you know, trying to best other people or just look good in the eyes of other people. Now, the last thing we're gonna throw into this conversation is the fact that it should be min habehema, okay, right? It should be from an animal, from cattle, or from sheep. So the last thing that I'm gonna bring in now is, why does it specify that it should be from an animal? Lahotzi zera pishtan. There's no such thing as a flax korban. We're gonna avoid that one entirely. So even though we didn't like Hevel's motivation for giving the korban, we are going to approve of the fact that he gave from the best of his sheep, and we should try to emulate that. That should be the substance of our korbanos. Umasha amar takrivu korbanchem, and those last words there in the pasuk, you should offer up, or you should bring your, come close through your korbanos. Hainu michel vehen. So these words are meant to teach us that specifically the part of the animal that we should make sure to give in any korban, whether it's a korban that is entirely burnt up on the mizbeach, or whether it is a korban that is only partially burned up on the Mizbeach, and some of it is saved to be consumed either by the Kohanim or by the Kohanim and the person who brought the Korban, and maybe their family as well. There's one part that's always going to be burned up on the Mizbeach, and we're never allowed to eat, and that is a type of fat called the Chelev. Now, I looked this up once in the past, and I don't know if this is 100% reliable, but what I saw was that this is the type of fat that's referred to in English as suet, like kidney fat. And this is hachelek hamuvchar. This is like the best type of fat, she'adam bocher la'atzmo, that a person would ideally prefer to keep for themselves. So the part that we would always want to keep for ourselves, we're never allowed to keep for ourselves. That always has to get burned up on the mizbeach, right? Given over to Hashem. Hanikra korban chem, okay? And this is what it means when it says your korban, okay? When you come close through your korban. So the korban that you're really offering every single time, that's going to really bring you close, is giving the best portion of this animal every single time, even though that's the thing you'd want the most, you're always going to be completely giving that over to Hashem. Oso takriv ligavoha. This is the one that you're always going to come close to the one on high through the means of this particular type of fat, this chaylev. All right, so this I think is a good place for us to stop for today. Thank you everybody for joining me. And if you have ideas for future topics in Vayikra that you'd like to cover in future weeks, then please go ahead and let me know and I will do my best to research them and see what we can find. Anybody have anything they want to say before we end this conversation here? I'm going to stop sharing my screen. Okay. All right. Well, then thank you, everybody. And especially for those of you on the East Coast, I know it's very late. So good night.